Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Monday, January 3rd. Happy New Year, 2022. And I told you I was going to have New Year's resolutions for you, and I don't have them ready because they're not finalized. And just so you know, I put a lot of thought into things like this for my own personal life. And I had too crazy of a weekend. I had family in town, obviously, like everyone else, right? It was a holiday, New Year's Day, New Year's Eve, all of that. And I didn't get to finishing them. I have them written, but I want to make sure they're exactly how I want them. The one thing that I do have done, though, that I want to mention is kind of the charity work. I made a decision, you know, kind of a year and a half into this platform that I was going to use this as a catalyst for change in whatever I wanted to change, right? There's a number of things that I'm passionate about. And so I'm talking about charity work, charitable benefits, charitable donations. And so I am really, really happy. I had a goal that I was going to try to raise $50,000 for charity. And as of the 31st on Friday, we cut checks or raised $82,000 in 2020. Boom. So really fired up about it. Zone 6 fund raised $70,000. Braxton Miller, so here's who we donated to. The Zone 6 fund has $70,000 sitting in it right now. And we have unbelievable things planned for it now that the new year has turned. Braxton Miller Foundation donated $5,000. $5,000 donated to youth sports. $1,500 donated to a police force. We sponsored a softball team. And then $500 was just kind of a random donation to someone that was battling through some cancer issues and bills. So anyways, $82,000 was raised. Our goal for 2022, I'm putting it right now, speaking it into existence, is 150K. That's our goal. And we're starting off trying to raise $5,000 with our big money board, Chris. We've already sold over 20 squares. We got 7 days left. So we really need to sell 10 a day. That's my goal. I'm going to promote the hell out of it. Social media on here. It's really simple. Pay $100, you get a square. If nothing else, you're donating $100 to charity, right? If you hit, right, you get two digits, a winning digit, a losing digit. If that is the last digit of the score at the end of the first quarter or third quarter, you win $500. So turn 100 into 500. If those digits are sitting there at halftime, you win $1,000. And if those digits are sitting there at the end of the game, you will win $3,000. So someone's going to make out huge. And there's been a couple times where the same number hit three of the four quarters. So you talk about a big payday if that happens. So Georgia, Alabama on the 10th, big board, big money board for charity. If you're interested, just Venmo, Cameron Media, or just shoot me an email, zach@menace2sports.com. This morning at 6:30 a.m., I was firing off emails at people that are interested. So go ahead and lock those in. Help me fill this board and help me start 2022 off the right way on my goal to raise $150,000. And I have some huge, huge things in the work that might make $150,000 attainable by June. But still, just got to go from 82 to 150. That's the goal. If we hit it by June, good Lord, watch out. We're going to have some significant change in the city of Columbus if I have any say about it. So that was 3.5 minutes of me telling you about charity. So we got to get to the show, but I will tell you, I had a ridiculous weekend betting. And Menace to Picks finished absolutely on fire, over 700 units up in December, which is, I've never even heard of it. I think we've had some lucrative months up 300 units, 400 units, but 722 units is just nuts. So if you're interested in gambling and want a handicapping service, go to follow Menace to Picks on Twitter. If you want to check it out on Patreon, go ahead. But I got a parlay for you today, Chris.
All right, I'm listening.
So I'm rocking this one. I'm taking Man U to win. Now they play at 12:30. So if you don't get this in, you don't listen early. You need to listen to the show earlier. It's a morning show for a reason, right? We're listening in the morning. But my bookie parlay, promo code Menace, get free deposit match. I'm going Man U and Purdue hoops to beat Wisconsin at home. Little two leg parlay, about even money. That's how I rock. I love two leg parlays dating back to my upset parlay. I think it was NC State and Arkansas back when Arkansas beat A&M. I think it was NC State. Either way, that's my go-to. That's my two-team parlay. But enough about that. We got so much shit to talk about. What a weekend of college football. First of all, good Lord, Michigan couldn't have shit the bed any more than they did. Just it got embarrassed.
I'm changing my tune on how I talk to Michigan fans. Like, I will no longer go back and forth with them, Zach. What I will tell them and how I will treat them is Michigan is not ready for the pressures that come with being elite. Michigan's not there. And whenever a Michigan fan tries to talk to me, tries to clown me about this year, you know, 42, whatever, blah, 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 I'm going to tell them, well, good luck, because that team's not ready for the pressures. Oh, it's your first time in the dance.
Here's the deal. It's one thing, and don't get me, I'm not going to take anything away from what they did in that game, because it was outstanding. Mm-hmm. But it is one thing to have a senior-laden team against a young team at home in your stadium in a game that you've been preparing for 12 months.
Yep.
That is vastly different than taking your team into hostile environment. I know it wasn't an away game necessarily. It was a neutral site game, but it's an entirely different atmosphere, entirely different stadium, and that college football playoff is different than any other game these kids have ever been a part of. And you have to be prepared for that. And not only that, I know Jim Harbaugh was in a Super Bowl, but he's never been a part of a championship game, right? They went to the Big Ten championship game, played an awful Iowa team, and they obviously handled business there. But the college football playoff is different. Like, everything about it, from the napkins when you eat breakfast at the hotel with CFP logos on it, right, to press conferences, to media at practice, just there's a different buzz about it. And you have to really, really know what you're doing as a staff and have a grown-ass man team to go in there and be prepared and have the grit to go fuck somebody up, right? That's what you have to be able to. And you could tell from the first snap, those coaches weren't ready. Those players weren't ready. That atmosphere swallowed Michigan whole. Talk about Mia Khalifa. Swallowed them whole. I mean, just, and you could tell they were starstruck. It was like, it was like a boxer that their first fight is against Mike Tyson. And they're just sitting there like, holy shit, man, that's Mike Tyson. Oh my God. I'm freaking fighting Mike Tyson. Like, well, they're sitting there like looking around.
They beat their neighborhood rival and then had to go fight Mike Tyson.
Right. That's exactly what it is. And so they absolutely weren't ready for it. Cincinnati actually played a hell of a game. Mm-hmm. And as I predicted on the preview show, I was wrong on the Michigan game. It's just, I just went through why and I will break down those two games on, I think Tuesday, I'm going to break those two games down.
The way Twitter was acting, Zach, though, you're not allowed to be wrong the way Twitter was acting this weekend.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, I think that's the second time I've been wrong all year. Yeah, it really is. And both of them have been against Georgia, because Georgia's, I don't know, man, they're just flawed. I think Alabama's going to win the national championship. Yeah. But it just, the Michigan game did not go how I thought it would. I thought with the way the Big Ten was trending, the way the SEC was trending, that Michigan would show up, and they did not. I also underestimated how well Georgia was going to play on offense, though they're still not a great offense. They played really well. Stetson Bennett balled out. but the Cincinnati game played out exactly how I thought it would. Jameson Williams was kind of a non-factor. Bryce Young played okay. I mean, he played well, but Cincinnati's defense,
Luke Fickell, man.
Yeah, Cincinnati's defense was fucking gangster. And I knew they would have a great plan. I talked about it, about how Luke Fickell and Chris Ash defended Amari Cooper and Derrick Henry. And, you know, I knew they would. And I also on the show talked about they don't have the firepower on offense. Like, they rely on this big white kid that can't run to be kind of a deep ball threat. And it's like, oh, shit, that's the deep ball threat? Good God. You know, I remember back in the day with Marty Gilliard and shit, Cincinnati had a kid that might be a little questionable character or maybe didn't have grades out of high school. That was the deep threat, not fucking, you know, Tommy Stevenson from fucking Upper Arlington. Jesus Christ, what was that? But they just didn't have the skill on offense. Desmond Ridder, he obviously has an issue with his release point because he releases the ball so damn low. They just batted about 10 passes.
Yeah.
So it just, Cincinnati just wasn't ready offensively for that game. But defensively, holy shit, did they put on a clinic. And it's going to be cool because now not only has Georgia played Alabama, right? Not only did Georgia not really do much against Alabama, and I'm still standing by the fact that I think Georgia intentionally, not intentionally lost, but intentionally withheld a number of things that they liked against Alabama in the SEC championship game, knowing there was a strong possibility that if they lost that game, this would be the inevitable matchup, right? They would return to play Bama, and they still have bullets. They still have an arsenal in their chamber
to maybe they were less risk oriented the first time around. I mean, this time around they'll be significantly more risk, obviously, because they got beat the first time. And what's the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. They're going to go out there and you know, go all in. And I kind of feel the first time they didn't go all in, maybe playing a little bit safer. But they're going to have to empty that chamber if they want a shot in this title game.
Oh, there's no doubt they are, and I think what we did find out is, one, like I said, in Alabama, Brian Robinson in the run game were going to be a big factor against Cincinnati, because I felt like that's one place that they had a little bit of an edge on Cincinnati. And then another thing is, I mean, what we saw is Cincinnati gave Georgia a blueprint, like an effective strategy to stop Bryce Young and Jameson Williams. And I mean, obviously, John Mechie's going to be out for the national championship game. I mean, he had 100 yards and a touchdown against Georgia last time. Mm-hmm. And they had some young guys step up against Cincinnati, but I think Georgia really is in the driver's seat in this game. I just don't trust their offense. I don't think they have the offensive prowess to beat Bama. I don't. Now, I'm not ready to call that shot yet, because obviously I want to break it down on Thursday, but it's, I just think that this is it's gonna be a fun game either way.
I'm excited, but I do want to talk about kind of what's more on my mind. Dude, what a New Year's Day! What a day for football, and what a day for Ohio State, Zach. I mean, what JSN was able to do, it was unreal. And I just want to get your take on JSN's enormous day on the other day.
Well, ridiculous, and that's another one that I called my shot. I mean, with those two kids out, I mean, he was going to feast, and that secondary was not a badass secondary. And more importantly, I don't have the analytics in front of me, but they really struggled in the slot. And that kid's one of the best receivers. He's the odds-on favorite to win the Biletnikoff. I mean, he's in 2022. He's an absolute monster, and
I operate in the world of extremes, the world of Ohio State extremes. Zach, that's the best player to ever touch a blade of grass. He's the best player to ever touch a blade of grass. Regardless of sport, he's the greatest ever.
Well, that's a little extreme. You're right. But, I mean, what are we talking about? 15 catches, 350 yards, 3 touchdowns. And then Marvin Harrison Jr., just absolute coming out party. And as I said, I you know, not to shit on anybody, but Julian Fleming's just a guy. I mean, He got outshined by Emeka Egbuka, Marvin Harrison Jr., Jackson Smith and Jigba. I mean,
that interception, was that a bad throw from CJ to Julian, or should Julian have worked back inside?
It was definitely a bad throw, and Julian should have. I mean, Julian didn't even get off the ground. It was a very unathletic looking play. But either way, that's going to happen. I mean, what are you talking about? When a kid throws 46 times and 6 touchdowns, he's going to have a pick. I mean, kid threw over almost 600 yards.
Right. I was just curious, because some guys, I mean, are able to adjust and get back inside. I thought Olave was really good at that, kind of his time at Ohio State. But Julian looked a little bit unathletic on that play, but he's a freak athlete, but still.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, Julian could have done a better job, but it was a bad throw. But I will tell you this. I mean, you talk about just masterful performance. As good as Jackson Smith and Jigba was, C.J. Stroud was unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable. Just his accuracy. There was a play to Emeka Egbuka. He ran a go route, if you remember this. There's three plays that I want to talk about. Obviously, the first one was Marvin Harrison Jr.'s touchdown on the left side on the inside fade. He was kind of in the slot, ran the little inside fade. And the where C.J. Stroud puts the ball makes it uncoverable. And just speaking from a receiver coach's experience where that was not usually the case, like, pinpoint accuracy and uncoverable throws was not a commonplace in our offense. Pretty much every throw was a contested throw. It's unbelievable what you can do as a receiver if a quarterback's able to paint those dots, you know what I mean? To hit those spots. And that throw to Marvin Harrison Jr. on the left side was fucking unreal. And the catch was great. I mean, you got to think about this, right? If you're catching the ball over your outside shoulder like he did there, Jackson Smith and Jigba had one of the best catches I've seen. And if you pull it up, that third down that Devin Smith had against Michigan State was almost the exact same catch. I mean, that ball is out like an arm's length outside over his outside shoulder, even with his shoulders, right? Not leading him, even with his shoulders. But there's no chance that any DB touches that ball. And the ability to go catch that ball for Marvin Harrison Jr. on the inside fade, Jackson Smith and Jigba on the right side on the inside fade, was unreal. Mm-hmm. I mean,
and then absolutely. It was a similar throw to Egbuka the play before Marv scored too.
Well, like so that's the throw I want to talk about. The most impressive throw of the night, and it's not even close, mm-hmm. was Emeka Egbuka runs a go route. Typical young receiver. I mean, really an awful route. No release, doesn't try to lean and stack. And the biggest thing on those go routes is you can be covered, right? Mm-hmm. You'd like to not be. You'd like to be behind the DB. But if you are covered, you just have to lean back on the DB and fight to stack him. And if you don't, at least you've saved the box, is what I always used to say, right? You have to be 6-7 yards from that sideline to give the quarterback a box to drop the ball in, right? Over your outside shoulder so you can fade to it, catch it. The DB can't make a play. Well, Emeka Egbuka, he runs a go route and he just gets washed to the sideline. He's literally 6 inches, maybe 8 inches from the sideline. There's no box to throw it in. And I'm sitting there as he's running, I'm like, I'm screaming like, no, what are you doing? Like, like give him a box. Well, fucking my dumbass, CJ Stroud only needs like a little box. He just needs a little lunch box to throw that bitch in. Because he put that on his outside shoulder with literally an 8-inch box 40 yards downfield. It was the most unbelievable throw I've seen. I don't want to say ever. No, not ever. I got a couple more that were maybe slightly more impressive, but it's the most impressive throw I've seen in a long time. Dropping that ball on that kid's outside hand with an 8-inch box to throw it. CJ Stroud was unbelievable. And fuck all of that. My man scrambled his ass for a 10-yard gain, first down. And when he did it, I was like, and you already know. I mean, as critical as I've been of CJ Stroud, my Twitter feed just exploded.
Like,
I know Coach Jackson Smith is just going crazy right now. So as I tweeted, the 2020 version of CJ Stroud is twice the player the 2021 version is. So maybe that humble pie, if you want to call it that, finishing mm-hmm. fourth at the Heisman, really worked its magic because the kid showed energy. He showed passion. I still like a little bit better demeanor, but I'm not trying to split hairs here. I'm not trying to, I'll take the kid we watched on Saturday every single week forever. And that kid will win a Heisman Trophy, be the first overall pick. If he plays like that next year, he'll be gone. First overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner. And Ohio State will have a legit shot. If Jim Knowles' defense can stop somebody at,
just need like 5 stops a game.
Right. That's it. And look what happened, right? To give credit where credit's due, the defense played horrendous in the first half, but they nutted the fuck up in the second half. Mm-hmm. They really did. And they shut down Utah. They got some stops. They got the ball back to the offense, and they gave Ryan Day's offense a chance to have some fireworks and make it a ball game. And they did, and none better. I mean, it was the ending to the 2021 season that we all needed, right? The young receivers flourish. CJ Stroud plays amazing, scrambles for a first down, has some energy. The defense finds a way to bow up and get some stops when they count. And then Noah Ruggles tuggle my balls, hits a game winner and waves at the defender that dives trying to block it. Just, it was like sayonara 2021. We'll be back in 2022.
Yeah, no, you're right. I do have one question though, a critical question before I go into full love mode. What's up with the kickoffs, man? My boy Tyler texted me. He was a little bit bugged about the kickoffs. It felt like we were like it felt like Penn State again almost. Like we just kept kicking to the kid.
Yeah. Well, the reality is Ohio State doesn't have a kicker that can kick it out of the back of the end zone. I mean, that's the only answer, right? Mm-hmm. Because that kid Covey that was unbelievable. I mean, he averaged like 30 yards a kick return. He had a 97 yarder for a touchdown. I mean, just it was a bad deal. And Ohio State didn't have an answer because they didn't have a kid with a leg to kick it out of the end zone. I promise that's going to be a very, very high priority through the transfer portal. They're going to have to find somebody that can boot that thing out of the end zone.
Those like weird little pop up kicks. That I don't know. It felt a little off, and I couldn't really.
Well, they got in a bind, right? Mm-hmm. Because they did the kid returned a kickoff for a touchdown. Because they can't kick it with hang time and kick it deep, which is the one number one option. The number two option is just boot it out of the end zone for a touchback. That they couldn't do that either. So now they're trying to do all kinds of shit to keep it out of that kid's hands. Little pooch kicks, little flop kicks, whatever you want to call them. Little bloopers, and they couldn't keep it out of his hands. I mean, he had 7 of the 8 kickoffs. He returned them. So,
and the one he didn't return went out of bounds.
Yeah. So it's rough. It's rough to watch. And it was solely based on the fact that they don't have a guy that can boot that bitch out of the end zone. They really don't.
I do want to talk about Cade Stover for a quick sec. Cause that's a guy that was a tight end all season. And then flipped back over to defense. I'm not sure how fundamentally sound he was. I'm not sure, you know, if he was in the right place at the right time. But holy shit, Zach, I could feel him. Like, he was amped up. He was energized. You could feel his energy. And that was kind of something I hadn't seen from the defense all year. But Cade Stover, quick transition. Now he's back to playing defense.
Yeah, I mean, he looked natural over there. And I know a lot of people have said that he belonged on that side of the ball, but he looked natural over there. They definitely need help over there. The only problem right now is that
he was playing the Leo.
Yeah, right. And the only problem they have right now is that, I mean, Jeremy Ruckert's leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And so who's your tight end?
In G Scott, we trust. Stop playing with him.
Listen, I love G Scott, but he is not an on-the-line tight end. You can't line him up on the line and block a defensive end. No chance. I mean, you could have him off the ball. He might be able to go cut one off. But you talk about point of attack, you know, go 4 points and block a DN. That ain't happening, bro.
I think we're playing 7-on-7 football from here on out. So,
well, I mean, the reality is it's unfortunate because we have a Heisman Trophy caliber running back. But what I watched on Saturday, they might throw that bitch 55 times a game every game.
I felt Ryan Day have the fuck balance moment during that Utah game. I think that all year he's been trying to, you know, stick with the balance, have balance, have balance. But he was just like, you know what? Fuck the balance. JSN's going crazy. We got Marv out there. We got CJ throwing dots. We don't need balance anymore. Let's just go.
No. And you even look at it. I mean, the run game wasn't there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they averaged 5 yards a carry, but it just wasn't popping. And I go back to my thoughts on stretch run. It's just not. I love Ohio State's offense. I really do. And I've been critical of it so much so that my guy, Chris, you know, I haven't even mentioned this publicly or anything. My guy, Kevin Wilson, blocked me on Twitter. I'm like, that's my fucking guy, too. He must have been sick of seeing my tweets about the stretch run game because I know it's his baby, but he fucking blocked me.
He subtweeted you in his post game interview.
I know. Oh, I saw him. He was like, the number one offense in the country, but I know we're not very good.
Number five rush offense, but Zach Smith doesn't want to talk about that.
So I'm supposed to piss. I'm going to text K Dub and be like, hey, man, my bad.
I am so sorry.
Oh, it's just a philosophical difference of opinion. That's all. I mean, obviously, the shit works. You look at this offense, it was unbelievable. I think Travion Henderson is a Heisman Trophy caliber back, and if he just runs stretch, he's not going to be that. He'll be a great player, though. He'll go to the NFL, have a great career, so it's not knocking it. It's just the style of offense is just different than I would run. That's all. I love the throw game. I think they could be even more dynamic with a more extensive run game, but it is what it is. You put up 683 yards on a really good defense. Who the fuck can be critical, right? Mm-hmm. Not only that, but they were so good. I mean, Ohio State only had 9 third downs, and they of those 9 third downs, they converted 6 of them on third down or on fourth down. So 6 of 9, 67% of the time, the drive got kept alive. I mean, they were outstanding. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal performance by the offense in that second half by the defense. And the other guy who was all over the field, and I don't want to completely, you know, revert or go backwards on my opinions on him as a player, but Tommy Eichenberg made every damn tackle. And the reality is Utah's not that athletic of an offense, if I can put it nicely. And he really thrived in it. 17 tackles in the game. He was all over the field. And so that was great to see.
He did get beat for the one touchdown, but he was in the run game especially, did a really good job, I think.
He did. And you know what? That's exciting to see, because if you can have that kid be a solid-ass interior linebacker, now you have some pieces you can build around it. Get Cody Simon back from injury. Get those guys coached up. Get those guys triggering. If Cade Stover's going to play linebacker moving forward, which I don't know if you – I really think he's going to move back to tight end because they don't have another option right now. But either way – big win for the Buckeyes. Huge weekend of college football. And
fourth and one call. I want to ask you about that. That fourth and one call. How much guts does that take to run a fourth and one fade?
Well, it's what you're confident in, right? It's and in that situation, fourth and one, Ryan Day said, I trust my quarterback and receiver to make this play more so than the offensive line to roll off the ball and give me 2 yards. I mean, that's what it is. That's what it tells you, right?
Yeah, but don't no more run game slander. But I hear you.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it's not even a knock on the O-line. I mean, they I thoroughly believe they would have rolled off the ball and gotten 2 yards. Mm-hmm. I just think Ryan thought, you know what, this is my go-to right here. Yeah, well, I trust this quarterback.
It's almost guaranteed one-on-one coverage on the outside. Yeah. There's not going to be any safety help, obviously, because they're worried about the run, and then there it is. You take your shots. So
yeah, and I've been there. I mean, we played Wisconsin, and to go to overtime, we threw a fade to Noah Brown, mm-hmm. and – I mean, it was like, if you don't complete that, you lose the game. And I called for it. I recommended it to Urban, and he was like, oh, shit. call it. And so Ed Warner called it. And I basically put my job on the line. I mean, yeah, if Noah Brown doesn't get open and doesn't make that catch, fucking, we're having a hard conversation on Sunday. Yeah, I literally might get fired. So mm-hmm. It takes balls, man. It's easy. I'll tell you this much. It's way easier to do if you're the head coach. Because you ain't getting fired for it. Right. You do that as a coordinator, or God forbid, like I did as a receiver coach, and that shit doesn't work. One, they're never listening to your ass again. And that's even if you're around to listen to. So I've done that a couple times just because, you know, I don't give a fuck. I'm like, all right, fire me. I'm trying to win a game here, and I feel good about this. But now, it obviously worked, so it was all good.
and now you're here with me.
Right, more, and then I ended up getting fired anyway, so who cares?
During the game also, I don't know if you want to address this now or you want to wait till you hear from him. Marcus Williamson's tweets.
Yeah, so I've already talked to Marcus, and he told me he's going to contact me today, this morning, and figure out a time to do a show. And I do want to just say this, because I know Buckeye fans are all in their feelings about what the stuff he said, and as you should be, rightfully so. But here's what I believe about this this platform that I've built, this show, and situations like this, right? This platform is based on raw, real shit, unfiltered, you know, under the hood. Mm-hmm. What better than this situation to talk about some under the hood shit? And if you think for 1 minute that anyone is going to come on this show and spew inaccurate or nonsense slander without a complete pushback and counter narrative, you don't fucking know me at all or this show. You haven't paid attention. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I want to have him on is two reasons. One, I like the kid. I liked him when I was at Ohio State. I think he's a good kid that obviously had a bad experience, and I think he should be able to talk about it. I also think we'll get a little bit of a breakthrough if I talk to him, because if you let this kid go on some random ass podcast somewhere else, somebody that doesn't know shit, it's just going to be softballs lobbed up to him, and he's going to be able to just smack Ohio State as however he wants. Smack coaches, whatever. Here's the difference. I know all these motherfuckers. I know the coaches. I know the program. Like, you can't, not once will you be able to say Urban Meyer's racist or Trayvon Martin was on a fucking PowerPoint. I was there. It didn't happen. Ryan Stamper made the goddamn PowerPoints. He's a black guy from the inner city of Jacksonville. You think he's fucking putting Trayvon Martin on a goddamn PowerPoint? Come on, man. This shit's out of touch. Now, I mean, maybe it's like a lot of things. Things get remembered differently 4 years later. Like 2017, right. PowerPoint, like, I promise you, there's no doubt there was a no hood rule. So, more story. I'll keep addressing it. Then we'll talk to Marcus if he comes on and address it all with him. But there was a no hood rule, right? And hate to break it to you, there's nothing racist about not having a fucking hood. You look more professional. You look more bright eyed. You look more awake. You look more ready to fucking work if you don't have a hood on, right? It's just what it is, right? You have your hoodie up. You fucking wearing sunglasses inside. You look like a fucking idiot. Black, white, Chinese, doesn't matter.
We had a no hood rule, I'm a baseball player. No hood rule there, and I'm primarily a white sport.
What do you mean? But time out now. Go to fucking Apple. Go walk in Apple and walk in mm-hmm. and walk through their office. How many fuckers have hoods up? Mm-hmm. Like this is just about society, America. Like, hey, you can have the hood on outside when you're chilling, all that. You come to work, take the fucking hood off, and let's get to work. Had nothing to do with Trayvon Martin or white, black, none of that. I mean, it was white guys too. There were some fat ass old linemen who had their hood on looking all fucking sleepy that are white as shit. Yeah, it had nothing to do with race. Mm-hmm. It had nothing to do with race. Yeah. And now we'll
hopefully address that with him too. Or you will.
Yeah, no, I will address it with him. Yeah. And to be honest, a lot of his sentiments I agree with. Like, a lot of things he was tweeting, I agree with. Now, I will absolutely have a counterpoint or an opposing view, maybe even a devil advocate's view that I don't fully believe, but we're going to have a good conversation, and it's going to be productive, and it's going to be good for him to get on and kind of air his grievances and just talk a little bit, because the kid was a Buckeye for what, 5 years, 4 years?
And he's an Ohio kid.
Yeah, he's a Westerville kid. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, He obviously had a bad experience. He obviously had 100 different coaches, different schemes. His career didn't play out the way it won, what he intended it to. But the kid played. He was a good player at times. And I think he is a good kid. So I want to get him on for a couple of reasons. One, to just kind of address the elephant in the room, clear the air, but also give him an opportunity to clarify his statements and talk them out, talk through them. Because I don't want him to be a villain in Buckeye Nation forever, because he is a good kid and I like him. I mean, if I thought he was an asshole, maybe I'd have him on just to yell at him and call him a fucking douchebag and he wasn't a good player or something like that. Like, if I didn't like him, maybe I would do that. But I do like the kid. So I want to talk to him. And I want to talk to him for everyone else to hear so they can get it. I want everyone else to understand that he's a good kid and a likable kid. Like, I don't want him to be a villain in Columbus. I don't want that. Right. And I'm not saying that he needs to like retract his statements to do that. I just think he needs to talk about them. Let people understand his perspective a little bit. So that's my intention. And I'm absolutely going to do it. Once again, don't give a fuck who likes it or who doesn't like it. It certainly will not be a bash Ohio State session. This show has never become that. They fired me. If I was going to bash Ohio State, I don't need Marcus Williamson to come on to fucking do it. Trust me. So that's not what it's going to become. And honestly, if you don't like it, go listen to some podcast that jerks off CJ Stroud every day. I mean, maybe you're into that type of shit. But that's never going to be the show. Like I said, raw, real, under the hood, behind the scenes. We're going to talk to Marcus. Guess what? We're going to have Jameson Williams on here in the offseason. We're going to have a lot of people on. And that's, you're going to get a lot of insider access to behind the scenes info that you will get nowhere else. And I promise you, no one will get away with murder on this show. You're not going to come on here and, you know, for 20 minutes talk about how Urban's a racist. And I'm like, well, there you have it. Urban Meyer's a racist. Like, that's not how it's going to go. Never will. So wanted to clarify that just so people aren't, because I know a bunch of people were going after me on Twitter about like, why would you give him a platform to slander Ohio State more? It's like, what? you want to call it that? That's not what I'm going to do, though. So it is what it is. Yeah, but obviously the kid had a bad experience, a sour taste in his mouth, bitter taste in his mouth at the end of his career. And it's really sad to see, because he is a good kid. Like I said, you may not think so because he talked bad about your Buckeyes. But, you know, there's like in everything, correct, there is two versions to every story. And somewhere in between lies the truth. Sometimes it's very close to one story. Sometimes it's very close to the other story. Sometimes it's smack in the middle. But you can never take one version of a narrative as fact. You just can't. And you look at my situation with my ex-wife. The truth lies somewhere in the middle. Now, I happen to know that it lies far closer to my story than any other side of it. And
it's on the green.
Yeah. And to be honest, my story changed a lot after I got fired, where now my story is honestly the genuine truth. Mm-hmm. Now, before I got fired, I would not have publicly admitted that I had affairs or cheated on my wife. Like, I'm not going to admit that. I wouldn't have lied about it or denied it, but I wasn't going to openly say, listen, I was not a good husband. I cheated on my wife. I would have never said that in an interview, right? Getting fired gave me the freedom to do that. Gave me
the power back.
Yeah, it gave me the power back to be like, all right, you want to know the real situation? Here it is. Like, I wasn't going to put this out there publicly because it would hurt you in recruiting, hurt my career, all that. But now I don't care. Anyways, not to go on another story about my personal good life.
This is going to be one of the most loaded weeks we've had on the morning show in a long time. It's going to be a really, really good one.
There's no doubt.
That's all I have for today, Zach, unless you had anything else.
No, that's it. That's all I got. All right, I'm excited. Cool. I think I'm going to do a two-part show early in the week. It might be Tuesday, Wednesday, or Monday, Tuesday, depending on how my day goes today. We'll do a Rose Bowl breakdown on one of the episodes. Probably go drive-by-drive. I don't know if we'll do play-by-play, but certainly drive-by-drive. And then we'll come back with the college football playoff analysis of those two games. And Marcus will be a part of one of those shows, as long as he follows through on his word to come on like he has promised. So he is committed to come on. If he doesn't, he doesn't. And then outside of that, then later on in the week, we'll have another episode. We'll obviously start, you know, moving towards the national championship preview. And then, like I said, charity, man, trying to raise 150 grand, go get a square, $100. If you need a W-9 so you can count it as a donation, hit me up. I got it all. $100, big board, try to win $3,000 on the national championship final score, $5,000 in prizes total in one game. Going to be awesome. So hit me up at Camera Media on Venmo or Zach at Menace2Sports.com in the email. So appreciate everybody. Menace out.
Menace out.